Hello and welcome to the Rookie Pester Podcast. My name's Eric Mavitz. I am your host and bringing you today a conversation I had a few weeks back with Harris Bond. Harris Bond is a church planter with the Mission in North America. He's planting a church in Monroe, Louisiana. Now, I have a special relationship with Harris because I was actually chairing the committee in our search for a church planter, and so I was a part of the process of him becoming the church planter for that area, and it was a very you'll hear more about it in the episode. I won't give that away. Anyway, so this is a really great episode. We get into we actually spend the first part of the episode talking about the passing of Ravi Zacharias, how his ministry both had positively affected us, and what we take away from his legacy. And then we get into how Harris got into church planting. He's not a career church planter. He had been pastoring a church for almost 10 years before being called into church planting. And we talk a little bit about the overlap between church planting and just pastoral ministry, established church ministry. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I certainly did. And so with that, let's jump right in. Harris Bond, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. I'm glad to be on.
Yeah, so for those of you listening, Harris is out on his back porch. He works in the nature is his office, is what he says. He doesn't say that, I just made that. So if you hear birds in the background, things like that, That's why. So he's not like me and is recording in his son's bedroom, hiding away amongst midst of Pokemon cards and Hardy Boys books. So Harris, why don't we open up with just letting people know who don't know you, who you are and where you are and what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. I'm Harris Bond is my name. I'm a native of Mississippi. And after pastoring for 11 years in a wonderful town, Sylacauga, Alabama, where we moved right after getting married to Laura Beth Shields Bond, and three children. We've moved to, Northeast Louisiana, Monroe, West Monroe, kind of Twin Cities, area, and to do the work of church planting. And it is a work of church planting. Sometimes there's a core group that's already existing, or there's a mother church in the area. But this is, church planting from scratch, with no prior core group, or sending church nearby, at least not locally. So it is the work of, really of networking, evangelism, and discipleship. By the power of and grace of the Holy Spirit, the church or churches, may spring up.
Now we're going to get into more of about the church planting and how you got into that. But first I just want to take note that, Ravi Zacharias passed away today. And so I thought we'd take a minute just to kind of share some thoughts or memories, appreciation for him and his ministry. And I know for me, I remember listening to this guy and just kind of like, what is this accent? And trying to figure out, okay. And then finally figuring out getting used to the accent, listening to what he's saying, okay, he's quoting all these authors. He's saying all these things. It sounds really deep. I don't quite get some of it or most of it, but kept listening to him and he was really, helpful. I really enjoyed him and he really did pique my interest in the area of apologetics. And there was one thing actually specifically I took from him. I would listen to his, at that point they were doing podcasts were pretty new, but they were releasing them like his radio broadcasts. And so I would listen to them and they would kind of put him on repeat and he would repeat himself a lot. And so there was this one thing that he would talk about, which is the kind of summary of worldview of origin, meaning, morality, and destiny. And that how
you not only have to have answers for each four of those answers have to be, they have to be logically connected to one another. Because you can have a clever answer for origin, for instance, naturalistic evolution, but then where does naturalistic evolution bring you in the area of morality? And those are places where a lot of people don't want to go because it gets real ugly. So you have to have this kind of, and as a youth director, I would take you like the youth group and we would go through and we would plug in different religious systems into that grid. Origin. Okay. What do they say about origin? What do they say about meaning? What do they say about morality? What do they say about destiny? I found him very, very, very helpful as kind of one of those gateway guys into the area of apologetics. And really, he was really helpful for me and really, got me excited to, I guess, think different thoughts and to think deeper things. And so, he was a really interesting guy. I very much appreciated his ministry and was sad to hear his passing today.
Yeah, I was as a teenager, I really was a big question asker. I don't know to what degree I was doubting, the Christian faith, into which I was, had been growing up and growing up in a Christian home, forged through, I had a sister that was died in a car accident, and that God made himself very real to my family. And in the subsequent years, I began to ask lots of questions of how do I know, that this is true? And really and truly, those categories of origin and meaning and ethics and destiny. I mean, those, I was, not because I was some deep thinker necessarily, but I was asking those questions. And so, about that time, there happened to be somebody in my life who introduced me really for the first time to at least three Christian apologists or thinkers. One was Oz Guinness, who actually wrote a book on doubt. It's been different titles. I think the original title was Doubt. It had a big impact on me. Then was R.C. Sproul. Mm-hmm. And maybe, if my memory is right, it may have been through Ligonier Ministries, kind of the tape of the month kind of stuff, that I was introduced to Ravi Zacharias.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I mean, now that you just give a summary, the worldview summary as you just did, I was trying to remember the substance of that tape.
Yeah.
And guess what? it was at least on origin and meaning. Mm-hmm. And he did it. He took you through the different options and the lack of backing those options up.
Right.
Outside of the historic Christian faith. And so those had not only just a solidifying, helpful effect upon me, but as the years went by, I began to see more of the ministry of not only Ravi Zacharias, but the broader ministry, the place of apologetics in the broader scope of gospel proclamation. So apologetics, defending the faith, much of the way it's been done, over the last generation probably serves Christians mostly.
Yeah.
And that's legitimate, and it should. Mm-hmm. And biblically speaking, it should. But then also, in kind of how does that fit into your engagement with the world around you? Interestingly, the church I served prior to coming to Monroe, we had an interesting percentage for the Deep South, number of families who were Christian Missionary Alliance background. CMA. And I know,
CMA.
I know you are familiar with that very much. I don't know if that is, that your background or your wife's background? Or
my
you
wife,
to,
yeah. She went, yes. to, she went to Tocoa Falls College.
Yes. And so these dear friends, of which I'm speaking, they love Ravi because Ravi is CMA.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that, really. I guess I didn't really realize that. And so,
I didn't know that either.
I began to just get a taste of the broader evangelical, world, just the influence that he has. And so really and truly it is at this moment, although we can be grateful that he is, seeing origin, meaning, goodness, and destiny face to face in Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
We can also be utterly grateful for that God established the work of his hands in our day. And although we can, some of us can be cynical about culture wars.
Yeah.
And let's just tear down arguments for the sake of tearing down arguments. That's an important conversation. That actually is not an accurate reflection, that cynicism of Ravi Zacharias.
No, he was always very generous. And I remember,
yes.
I remember like he would go, and I remember him talking about the peoples in India and just the things, the rituals that they would go through for like ritual cleansings and things like that. And he just made the point, said, look, you know, these people are not to be mocked. Like they
yeah.
are seriously religious people and look what they're trying to get. Look what they're trying to achieve. And that's, you know, what we need to do is to show them how that is found in Jesus Christ, not to mock them for the longing that is in their hearts and in their souls. And that always stuck with me. And just how he was generous, and he would do those Q&As. I think that's one of the reasons he gained so much notoriety,
yeah.
because he would welcome these Q&A sessions with college students and professors, and he would field these questions, and they'd release these DVDs or videos of those Q&As, and it really did kind of do that. It kind of threw that. There's that long-standing. I want to call it a trope at this point, because I don't actually believe that it's largely true, which
yeah.
is. The church is not a place where you're allowed to ask questions.
Yeah.
Most pastors I know are begging for people to ask questions. They're delighted when people ask questions. I don't really know that many pastors who, when somebody asks a question, they go, why would you even ask that? You know, like,
yeah.
you know, just quote the catechism and be quiet. You know, like I just, you know, it's, but he really did very publicly turn that trope on its head and just say, hey, look, no, you can ask questions. You can ask tough questions. We can have hard discussions right here. And I'm going to give you thoughtful, logical, and biblical theology and answers. And I think it's just, yeah, you know, CMA, he wasn't, you know, a thoroughly reformed theologian, but we can deeply appreciate this brother of Christ, even a father in the faith, to, and what he leaves behind. So, well, let's go ahead and move on from that. And I mean, we'll definitely, you know, keep, his wife and children and grandchildren in our prayers as they are, good in mourning. And so let's get into, let's talk about church planting. So you said you were, so you're planting a church now, church planting is easy because you've done it so many times in your career, right? So you're a veteran church planter. You're a hyper entrepreneur, life of the party, right? That's your personality type. That's your background.
I do like parties. I have admired people who are true entrepreneurs of spirit. I have not included myself in that. Yes, it's laughable. I've never done this before. never planted before. Truth be told, it's not necessarily something that, that I or my wife had been mulling over and praying over or seeking out over the, months or years. We were really content, where we were, rooted down, deep relationships, you know, always having an a vision for the future.
Well, you were at your church for almost a decade, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Over a decade, a little bit. And you know, we weren't trying to leave. We weren't looking around. No one was trying to get us to leave. And that's praise the Lord. And although looking back on it, there was certainly a tension, and I think there should be this tension, with any pastor, any church leader, anybody, any believer in Christ as part of a local church, a tension between wanting believers, wanting the saints to grow in grace and even be shepherded, across the threshold of eternity into glory, and longing to see new people and or even new groups of people come to faith in Christ Jesus for the first time. Those two things must be desires of our heart. We do not see people according to the flesh anymore, but always through the lens of the new creation in Jesus, Paul says. And so those two things, sometimes we can load all of our eggs, I guess, into the, you know, shepherding the flock as merely, kind of internally, to the neglect of those around us who without Jesus Christ are indeed condemned. John 3. Some people can strive to place all their eggs into the basket of evangelism or outward facing and neglect the flock, I suppose. But it's both. And so there was that tension. And I suppose that tension was pushing me beyond, and this could be a trope, but I think there's something to it, pushing me outside the bubble, the walls of church culture that are there, whether we mean them to be or not, whether that is, having an us versus them mentality or kind of bogged down in Christian lingo in a way that sounds so foreign and even repelling to others. Just lots of different manifestations of that. And I was being pushed more and more, into the wild, to use a National Geographic term. And that was happening anyway in my life, in my personal life, in my growth as a pastor. And that definitely was used by God towards church planting. My church in Alabama began to support a church plant, and it had just a very wonderful effect on me and our whole church. It kind of stripped down to what is our priorities? It's making disciples. And so those things I supported and was very interested in following friends of mine who were planting churches. But I always would have discounted myself. I would have shown, and I did, in the process of how this came about. I remember someone first, Hunter Brewer, who is a church planter, but then he was the coordinator of a church planting network among a few different presbyteries in South Mississippi, Central Mississippi, North into Tennessee and Arkansas and Louisiana. just begin asking me, and there were he wasn't just out of the blue calling me up. I thought he was, but I said, look, I don't think I would do this. I've always thought of myself as a long distance runner with people rather than a sprinter, if that makes sense. And I thought, hey, a church planter needs to be able to do things fast. I struggle at times with depression, and I figured, well, I shouldn't be a church planter because of that, because it can be either lonely or, just, it's more insecure. And so those are my red flags. And I guess I learned over time that God uses different types of people. There is no one church planter personality.
Well, and you know, it's funny because in your story, because I'm a part of this story, and I'm on the other side of this, because I was chairing the committee that was looking for a church planter, and so we had looked at some places that we said, okay, you know, where do we want to plant a church? And Monroe was at the top of the list. And then we stopped, and Hunter was crucial in helping us to develop a process, for examining the church planters. And I really liked his process. There's kind of like two different interview processes you can do. The most common one is probably the most fraught with problems, which is kind of like the bell of the ball, popularity one, where you just try to get all these people competing at the same time for one spot. He recommended the flow of a river, where you take each candidate and you plug them through the process. And at some point, if they don't fit, then they don't fit. And it was a four-phase process. And so we were doing that. We were interviewing some people, and then I was keeping in touch with Hunter, and then he said, hey, I got a guy. He is like, I can't tell you his name. I got to go talk to him, because it's funny. When you start talking about the stuff, you got to be hush-hush, you know, about things. And so, but he said, I can't tell you his name. Let me go talk to him, and then I'll get back to you. And it was you. I could not have, from your background, your connections to our presbytery, like we could not have found, I'm not the only one that said this, but we could not have found a better fit for the place we were planting and for the makeup of our presbytery. So it was just providential. God in his kindness calling you up, to be like, hey, this is, because there was just, we had looked at other guys, and they were kind of like, and there were some really wonderful guys. They just didn't fit. And then the Lord brought you along, and we're like, he fits. And that's it.
Everyone's imagining, whoever my voice is with the big, like, Duck Dynasty beard right now, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you only wish you had a Duck Dynasty beard. So. I'm not allowed to have beards, so that's my wife does not go for the beard. So, I guess it's kind of like just reminds me of my conversation with Brett McAlpin, our missionary to Bulgaria, because he started out as working. You know his story then, because he started out kind of just as your average Joe church member. You know, he's an active member in his church, his Presbyterian church, in a small group, and then there's a couple in their small group that they become missionaries, and he realizes, oh, normal people can become missionaries, you know. And so and that whole idea of like, where you don't see yourself as a church planter, but then somebody else comes along and says, hey, you know what? I think you might have the giftings for this. I think you might actually be a good fit for this particular church plant. And it's like, then you go and you test it out and, you know, do the interview. You did the assessment center.
Yes.
So,
yes.
and that's that gets pretty personal. So I'm not asking for details on that. But what was your overall assessment of the assessment center? You see what I did there?
In the PCA, yeah. In the PCA, Mission to North America, MNA, they have an assessment process for prospective church planters that I cannot say enough good things about. In fact, I think I've discovered it is one of the great things about the PCA. I had in my mind this image of this grueling, death match or something where it's this horrible experience and only it's Hunger Games, and the survival of the fittest type thing. But it was very, very wise. It was very pastoral. It recognizes that everyone has strengths. And everyone has weaknesses. Everyone has personality types that God intentionally has wired each of us for. And it recognizes that God is at work in different ways. And let's look at those things. And God at work in our marriages. God at work in our personal lives. God at work in how we interact with people. They use a lot of tools. They use counseling, and these tools are—they're not like give me some references that all say good things about you. They were getting people to give good answers in concrete ways to concrete questions to people who've known you in the heat of life, in the heat of ministry, how you've responded well and not so well to get to the variety of situations. And really what you get is you get a type of feedback with so many variables that you get a pretty good picture that I'm convinced many people and many pastors and elders do not get.
Mm-hmm. I heard from somebody that said, that they went through the assessment center and or some extra church planter training.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, and they basically said, if we're going to do revitalization ministry, like we need to go train established pastors. There's like, yes, there's some church planter specific stuff. But there's some core stuff in here that the average pastor really needs to get into and go through, particularly for the work of revitalization. Sounds like you
agree
with that.
I could not agree more. And number one, I am coming from the perspective of someone who was in an established church for a decade at least. And so I do have a heart for the local church. I have a heart for revitalization. I think you could characterize my experience, as in that church as a, and others, of my church would agree, a work of revitalization. It is all about, character development and what some people call, soft skills. We're really good at credentialing people and passing theological exams. And biblical knowledge exams, those are important. But sometimes that can have less bearing on your ability to listen and understand people in front of you and relate to people in front of you. How do you relate to yourself? Are you even aware of your own weaknesses? And are you aware of what God is actually at work doing in your life? So, are you able, how skilled are you at understanding how your local community, what are the acts and things? I like to put it this way. If you know how to put your finger on your own pulse spiritually, then that readies you to take the pulse of the parish that is in front of you. And sometimes people call, I've heard them called soft skills, and I think that's good. There's a lot of coaching ministries. Eric, I think you know this well, the work of Flourish, yep. Matt Bowling, and others, Alan Edwards, people like that, you know, they're focusing on those quote unquote soft skills.
Yeah, we had Matt on the podcast earlier.
Oh, perfect. I mean, so yes, there's so much overlap, between church planting. It's just pastoral ministry. I mean, yeah. It's not unique to church planting at all. I don't know if it's just universal from generation to generation, or I have wondered, is our generation more uniquely weak, where we've had lots of books and data and information, but less? Actually, Paul said it this way. What did he say? You have many guides, but not many fathers, spiritually speaking, who have invested in you. And that's always stuck out at me. That's from one of the Corinthians. I can't remember. Okay. That's pastoring.
Yeah.
That's soul work. That's people work. And so, we need more of that.
I was just, as a quote that it's been stuck in my mind. I've been quoting it a lot, but it's from Montesquieu, and it says he complains about, and I didn't read Montesquieu. I heard somebody else quote Montesquieu who had actually read him, but then I quote Montesquieu and it sounds like I read him. So it makes me sound smart. Montesquieu said, he complained about the fact that there were many, many people whose minds were well filled, but not well formed. So there is that, and I think there's that kind of concern there, you know, even in pastoral ministry, where we can be well filled with all, we've got the resources and we got the data, but we haven't necessarily been formed by the scriptures or formed by this reformed theology. I was just preaching on this on Sunday, which was, you know, the difference between memorizing John 3:16 and actually applying John 3:16. You know, the difference between knowing but that's the difference between historical faith and saving faith, right? The difference between, you know, because like, I said, you know, you can know John 3:16 and believe it to be true and still go to hell. because unless you actually apply it to yourself and believe and trust in Jesus, that's when John 3:16 becomes real. But there's other areas in, you know, non-saving faith areas where we've, you know, perhaps we know, but we don't apply.
Yeah. And of course, that's general life maturity.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for us today. Be sure to join us in the next episode. We'll listen to the final part of the conversation with Harris. If you would like to get in touch with me, you can get in touch with me at eric@baileychurch.com. You can also find this the show notes for this episode and more over at therookiepastor.com. So for the Rookie Pastor Podcast, I'm Eric Mavitt. And remember, just one step at a time.